Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable, episode 137, week 3 in the SEC. Tonight, Shane Bailey is joined by Britt and Burton. Listen as they provide a heavy dose of East action with Georgia losing to South Carolina, a triple overtime thriller in the swamp, and is Missouri sneaking up on everyone again? On the West, they look at Auburn heading to Little Manhattan, the Bulldogs heading to Death Valley, and the Gators heading to Alabama. All this and more on this week's SEC SRT. Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable. This is your host, Shane Bailey. Back to cover a little weekly action in the SEC. So if you're new to the show, welcome aboard. Glad you found us. If you're a longtime listener, thanks for hanging in there with us. I hope we've improved over the last 3+ years we've been doing this. But we do this somewhat from a fan's perspective, so we do have sides. I'm a Kentucky guy. Tonight joining me, Britt and Burton. Welcome, Britton.
Hey, good to be back.
He is an Alabama guy. So we do get somewhat one-sided, I guess. We got called out this week by some listeners, actually, Britton. We weren't giving Auburn enough love, so we'll try to... I don't know why you would ever give them love, so I will try to represent for the Auburn Nation this week a little bit and try to give you a little biased opinion there as well. So we do this weekly. As the season is in full gear like it is right now, we do this after the games have been played, so we can talk about what we liked, what we didn't like, what broke our hearts this week, and then what to look forward to next week. Last week when me and Blair did this, it's like, you know, we don't have a whole lot to talk about week two with that slate of games that we had. And the next thing we know, just like always, 45 minutes later has passed and we hadn't even started looking at next week's schedule yet. So we will try to be a little more mindful about some of those games, but you know, it's really hard to try to keep this thing to an hour, which is what we've been trying to do here recently, and cover 14 teams. In some situations, you know, 28 games if there's no buys. That's generally not the case. You're going to get, you know, 23 to 25 games to look at when you look at last week and this week's worth slate of action. So lots to talk about and cram into an hour. So there's no promise we stick to that hour time frame, but that's where we've been trying to stick around here recently. And that's worked for us, but there's no guarantees, especially as the season progresses and there's better games going on. You're just going to see more time being taken up to talk about those things. So lots of ways to find us. Another listener today says, can I watch these live? It's like, as a matter of fact, you can. We do this via Google Hangouts. So you can watch or listen if you so choose on our YouTube channel or the Google Plus channel. Also, you can find us on Stitcher Radio, on iTunes, anywhere you can listen to a podcast. You're going to find that RSS feed out there for you to be able to find a way to listen or watch. We also have a website, SECSRT. Remember, those six letters, do a Google search, and you can find about any way you want to listen or communicate with us. You know, we're on Twitter, Facebook, Google+. We even have a Pinterest page. Got some great tailgating ideas out there for you on that page. But lots of ways to interact with us. So let us know what you think, what you like, what you don't like, and we'll try to address some of that if we can. But let's get right into the action from last week's games. Britton, was there anything that just popped out and said, wow? And I know we're going to talk about Georgia, South Carolina. So besides that, what jumped out to you from last week?
Well, obviously that one. I'm sure we'll save that one for a little bit later to go more in depth with that one than some of these others. I think other than that, two big things that stood out to me were just how terrible Vanderbilt is and that they have basically hit the point now where we just need to not talk about them on the podcast because people will fall asleep and quit listening. They're back to being Vanderbilt. And then Arkansas, the way they just whipped Texas Tech, whipped them physically, and looked like a classic Brett Bielema team in the process. Those two were probably the biggest things that stood out to me. Most of the other teams kind of played nobodies with a few exceptions. So those two, other than, of course, Georgia, South Carolina, were the big standouts to me. What about you?
Well, we can start with Vanderbilt and talk about him just for a minute. I do understand where you're coming from, but, you know, listening to part of the game, I had some soccer that morning and then catching most of the second half and earlier. One thing that I did take away from it was really nice to see that Vanderbilt didn't lose the fight. After they got down, 14-0 in the first quarter, they had their heads bowed down. They were you saw them. They looked dejected. They looked a little bit beat. But they found a way to kind of turn that around. They put 20 points into the second quarter to make it a ball game, you know, and came back and won that game. I think a lot of it had to do with putting Pat Robinette back in as quarterback. The demeanor of the team changed there. But to see them not give up, that was somewhat exciting if you're a Vanderbilt fan, to know that they still have some fight in them. Even though it was Massachusetts, it was a game that, by everybody's account, they should have won. That should have never been an issue. But to have them be from behind, play from behind, and win, I think that said a lot about the program and what they might be able to do. Now, can they do what everybody wants them to do and get bowl eligible if you're a Vanderbilt fan? I don't know. We'll talk about some of the matchups they have as it gets further along for them. I think they go to, South Carolina next week? Is that right?
They go to South Carolina.
So, you know, that's a tough way to go.
No, I'm sorry. South Carolina comes to Vanderbilt.
Does it really matter when it's Vanderbilt?
No, not this year.
As far as home field advantage goes. That's sad to say, but... You know, I agree with you in some instances, but, you know, I didn't see them give up. And so that's encouraging this early in the season, especially the way they, you know, the season could really go south. They could be looking at, you know, a 2-8 season versus a 4-8 season, or a 2-10 versus 4-8. I can't add math. But Arkansas, wow, you were right about Bielema. We didn't give him enough credit on our preview podcast, I don't think, about how he was. It took him a little while to get some of his pieces in place. You really saw what it was like when he didn't have his pieces last year and was able to get one or two extra pieces put in place this year, how that run game was effective. They just pounded there for a while. You know, they were trading touchdowns back and forth. But Arkansas's defense really kind of stepped up, had a big stop. And then that kind of turned the tide. And so they were able to continue with the offensive pressure they had. But then all of a sudden, you know, that battle where all of a sudden they missed an opportunity, they being Texas Tech, Arkansas was able to be very opportunistic about that, grab that, and then score, and then do it again, and really stretch that lead out. So, you know, Reese Davis said it today, and we talked about it on the podcast, really. They're a better program, but their record might not show it. At this point, yeah. I say that's still going to be true. The West is going to be so difficult. Ole Miss, Mississippi State, both have been playing cupcakes, but they look really sharp. But they still might be able to sneak up on somebody in the West they're not supposed to beat. So they have that opportunity. I was impressed with what Arkansas put on the field.
Yeah, I think I heard y'all talk about it last week. You definitely feel more confident that they maybe sneak up and beat somebody. And maybe it's an East opponent and not a West opponent, because I really thought they were going 0-8 in SEC play this year. But you're right, even though they're better, I mean, there are five top 10 teams just from the SEC West right now. I mean, that's just ridiculous. And, you know, Mississippi State is the one who's not in the top 10. And, they're really, really, really good too. So the one thing I have to temper my excitement about Arkansas a little bit, in that Texas Tech and a lot of these Big 12 teams, other than probably Oklahoma and Texas when they're actually good, are built defensively to defend all the other spread teams. I mean, every team in the Big 12 runs the spread and the hurry up. And so these Big 12 defenses are not as physically equipped to handle the power run game as some of the other SEC teams that they're going to play will be. I don't think they're going to be quite as successful with running the ball, but it was impressive to watch. I mean, they had at least one drive that was 13 plays long, and all 13 plays were running plays, and they were just mashing them. And you're right, they were able to get enough stops defensively, and that's kind of going to be their game plan against every team they play. And it may work against, you know, the Texas A&Ms of the world, who are such a contrast in style. At the very least, I think that some of those Arkansas games now might be interesting, whereas before the season started, I kind of viewed any game Arkansas was in as a channel changer for the most part. But especially those games where they're playing the contrasting style, I think those are going to be interesting. May not be as interesting when they play an Alabama or an LSU, but I could see just the way the styles contrast. Kind of like why we were interested in the Michigan State-Oregon game. Obviously, those were two top 10 teams, so that's a little bit different. But it's always fascinating to watch this contrast of styles and when that one style team is good. And it looks like Arkansas is better than we thought. So,
And their two East opponents is Georgia in the middle of the season. Then they end the season with a team that I was going to talk about next, and that's Missouri. So you look at what they've been able to do. UCF, even though they're, you know, now 0-2, you know, they basically shut them down. Gave them 10 points in the first half, shut them down completely in the second half. Missouri put up 38 points. You know, is Missouri able to reload and maybe compete for the East, especially after, you know, South Carolina and Georgia setting the way they are, and we still don't know what we're having in the East? That's what's so funny about the East is it's up in the air all of a sudden. At the beginning of the season, I was all on Georgia's bandwagon. I thought for sure that they had a chance to run the tables. I don't think I had them losing to South Carolina. And they have the easier slate as far as their schedule goes. But then they get to face Missouri. Now, how ironic would it be that they potentially at the end of the season, Arkansas could play spoiler for Missouri going to the SEC championship again? Not that Arkansas did it to them last year, but you know, it puts them in a position where, you know, they were able to get that fortune this past year. You know, that same fate could be handed to them this upcoming year with Arkansas playing them at the very end of the season.
Yeah, that's definitely a possibility. I've been impressed with Missouri. You know, UCF was probably the first real quality opponent they played. Toledo's not a complete cupcake, but I don't know how
at
much you
Toledo.
Learned about them.
At Toledo. You won't say it's a complete cupcake because of that. If they were at Columbia playing, maybe you would say it should have been a cupcake game. But playing Toledo up in Toledo wasn't.
Yeah, and UCF, you said they're 0-2, but they've lost to Penn State and now Missouri. So they've lost to two Power 5 teams. Now, I don't even know. Is it Power 4 now with how terrible the Big 10 is? So I don't even know if Penn State actually counts. But, I mean, they've looked impressive. And to beat a UCF team, you know, beating UCF is greater than beating Southern Miss, South Alabama, some of the other teams that SEC teams beat this week and beat by similar scores. So yeah, I still don't know that we know a whole lot about Missouri, and they play Indiana this week, so I still don't know how much we'll know until we get them into some SEC play.
Northern Illinois, one of those upstate teams.
Yeah, either way, not a power opponent. But yeah, I mean, you touched on that loss by Georgia was just unbelievable, and the SEC East is wide open now, and it makes me wonder if the SEC East is just kind of average, nothing special, and it's all about the SEC West, because Georgia losing the way they did to a team that looked as bad as they did in the opening game against a team who we all thought was going to be fifth or sixth in the West, I don't know what to think about that now.
I wish I had the answers. I don't know. I mean, I expected the way Georgia shut down Clemson's defense in the second half. Is that more of a test of how bad Clemson ended up being? For Georgia to do what they did and all of a sudden let South Carolina, I mean, Dylan Thompson destroyed them with those mid-range passes.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's still early enough that I think we just don't really know. I guess I'm leaning a little bit towards Clemson's not very good offensively, maybe, which we thought was a possibility with what they lost, the skill positions. And, you know, Georgia, I don't know. I mean, South Carolina did not do the things they did offensively against Texas A&M. They did not do the things that they were able to do against Georgia against Texas A&M. And we thought Texas A&M might be improved defensively, but they were so bad last year that we were kind of like, what does improvement mean? Does that mean they're the 80th best defense in the country now instead of the 100th? And then they came out and were just lighting up a Georgia defense that looked all world in their first contest. So I think really the answer is we need a couple more games against quality opponents by everyone to really know what we have. But right now it looks like there are six really, really good teams in the West, and there are two pretty good teams, maybe three. Maybe you throw Missouri in there. I don't know about Florida. Maybe there are three pretty good teams in the East.
If you throw Florida in there and they're a pretty good team, then all of a sudden you got to throw my Cats in there.
Yeah, so I don't know if you can do that. No offense.
But that's the discussion you've got to have when you're talking about the East right now. It's
wide open.
It's ridiculous. I mean, you look at the stats from this South Carolina Georgia game. I mean, Dylan Thompson threw for 271 yards. That's a lot of yards. That's not just. I mean, Hill threw 511 against South Carolina. So I mean, you know, it's half of what they did against. You know, what Texas A&M did against them. So it's not just like overly impressive numbers, but they came at such opportune times. And they rushed for under 200 yards, so it was fairly balanced. Looking at the attempts, they ran the ball a lot more than they passed. Attempts? No, it was pretty even. I'm sorry. I'm looking at the extra carries by the quarterback. They're pretty close as far as attempts to rushes. So, you know, South Carolina had a balanced attack. You weren't as much as everybody talked about the short passes and those mid-range passes being so successful. They came at the right times, but they had a good mix as far as South Carolina's play calling goes. They were pretty close to 50-50. They might be 45-55, but, you know, in today's pass-happy world, to be able to do that kind of a balance against a program like Georgia's defense that we were expecting so much more from. You know, that said a lot about a good game plan, and hats off to Spurrier to be able to get that kind of rushing in a win against Georgia. It was a huge win for South Carolina, and it just throws that whole East into turmoil. Now,
well, and to the rushing numbers, we talked after the Texas A&M game about how Mike Davis only getting like 6-7 carries, whatever it was, because he went out early with the injury. Did that impact their ability to run? And then in this game, he was not the best running back for South Carolina. So it's just kind of, I don't know, everything's just kind of turned on its head. I think the main thing I took away from that is that Steve Spurrier is a really good coach, and when he's kind of backed into a corner and has to get a win, he tends to find a way to do that. Now, I don't know that South Carolina is going to run the table now and be 11-1. I think they've got a couple more losses coming because they definitely have flaws. But it was an impressive coaching job by Spurrier.
Yeah, I mean, they have Auburn in the West still. They're at Florida. They are at Clemson. And Missouri is at home as far as looking at other big matchups for them. That's going to be interesting in two more weeks is that Missouri game. So now we're starting to be able to possibly see what Missouri can bring to the table because they don't have – they've. You were right. I don't know. Who was I looking at that said Northern Illinois? You're right. Missouri has Indiana this week. I don't know what I was looking at for Northern Illinois.
one of those I states up north. Same difference, basically.
Oh, Arkansas has northern Illinois. Missouri has Indiana. That's what it was. We were talking about Arkansas. It's like, you just said Indiana. It's like, wait a minute, I'm wrong, you're right. And I don't even know anymore. I do know that Missouri plays Indiana this week, and I forgot who they lost to, but that's no match for Missouri. So really, we don't truly know what we have yet with Missouri. It's going to be interesting to see when they play South Carolina in 2 weeks, because you think South Carolina is going to want a little revenge out of this game as well. And that's at Columbia, South Carolina this year. Did we lose you, Britton? Oh,
no, I'm here. Sorry.
Okay, you're good.
Difficulty. I'm still here, though.
What were you going to say?
Indiana lost to Indiana State. Or excuse me, beat Indiana State and lost to Bowling Green. So, yes, we don't. Even if Missouri dominates, we're not going to know much about them.
Yeah. And so, you know, 2 weeks coming up, they'll play at South Carolina. That's when we're really going to get our true understanding of what Missouri is bringing to the table this year, because then they get a pretty decent little test as far as that goes. They get an open date, then they get Georgia, then they go at Florida. So that's a three-game stretch for Missouri where we're really going to understand what's happening in the East, because Georgia and South Carolina and Missouri, all three play each other within the first couple weeks right there. So we're going to have an idea at that point. So by mid-October, we're going to have a little bit clear picture of what the East might look like, unless Florida starts, you know, making a run for it. And I don't know. You want to talk about that game?
Yeah, that was a great game. Let's go there.
It was an awesome game. I think I was right
about it. Slow start, but it really got going.
It was a slow start, but it was a good game. I mean, you know, the first half, I mean, you had some good defensive battles. It wasn't like, oh, this is just boring football. Some good hits, some, you know, it wasn't a lot of near misses. I took offense a little bit to Jesse Palmer on one of the interceptions when Toles threw, and I forgot who the defensive back is for Florida. But he's their best, one of their best defensive players.
Vernon Hargreaves.
Yes, Hargreaves. And he caught that interception. It's like, and he was talking about that he shouldn't have thrown it to him. But if you look at that play, it was more a fact that Toles didn't throw the right pass than he threw it to the wrong person. Because if he'd have thrown that ball back shoulder like he was supposed to have in that pass play, Hargreaves wouldn't have had a chance to intercept that ball, and that would have been 6 points the other way, or not the other way since we had the ball, but that would have been, you know, 6 points. And then to have, what, two deflections for interceptions for Toles?
Yeah.
You know, that's got to be gut-wrenching, because those are the only picks he's thrown this year so far, I believe. I don't think the first two games he's thrown any, and to come around and do that, to have them happen the way they did. It was, as big of a Kentucky fan as I am, I can't sit here today and be heartbroken about the loss, except for the fact that we had chances in that game to win the game that we let slip. It was like sand slipping through your hands. You look at it, you watch it, you go, you know, this has got to happen right here. And at times it didn't. So, but it was exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a great game. Well, and honestly, I mean, they should have won. Like, they did not get that snap off. Well, I can't say they shouldn't have won. It should have been a delay of game, and it would have been fourth and
12. Fourth and 12.
Yeah. Fourth and goal from the 12, right?
Yeah. Fourth and goal from the 12.
You know, that play where Florida tied it up in the second overtime. It was one of those just unbelievable plays. I mean, they're scrambling. People are running all over the place. I had to rewind it twice to make sure they even got set. You know, you have to be set for a full second before you can snap the ball. And they've got a back motioning out to try to get set up in the slot. And he's barely set. They snap it. The play clock is dead. Stoops is losing his mind because they haven't thrown a flag. And then Jeff Driscoll completes a pretty amazing fade route to the corner. That was just unbelievable. But
And I had a problem defensively with that play because it reminded me of Leitner in basketball all over again. You knew he was getting the ball. Why didn't you have a better defensive plan against him?
Yeah.
He slipped right past two defenders to end up in the back of the end zone all alone. And that's just – I couldn't believe that happened. So not only was there a delay of game that should have been called, and yes, I don't want to debate that because that was close enough realistically that I can let it slide. It would have been 4th and 12. They still could have scored. We don't know. So it didn't mean like that was the 4th down play they caught that on. So I'm going to let all that slide, but you can't let that guy get in the end zone like that.
Yeah, because that was the guy that had been killing you all night, right?
All night long.
Yeah, he was the receiving threat. So my two big takeaways, one were Muschamp's in trouble. I just don't know how good this Florida team is going to be.
It was Robinson had 15 catches for 216 yards, 2 TDs.
Yeah, that's a big day.
did you not think he was going to be their number one receiver?
Right. It didn't seem like anyone else caught any passes for Florida.
The next person caught two. That's the next closest.
Okay.
And there were three people tied with two. So if you're a defensive coordinator, don't you think he's the last person, him and Matt Jones, the running back, those are the two people you have to defend and make somebody else beat you? Because nobody else has beat you all day except those two. Because Matt Jones had a pretty good day rushing. He had 29 carries for 156 yards. So those are your two threats. You knew that they were going to either run the ball, which was unlikely from 7 yards out on 3rd down, or they were going to throw to Robinson. Why do you let him slip past you like that? That was – if I had to take issue with there's probably other things, but that's the one thing that stands out to me about that play is was he just slipped right past both of the backs. So,
yeah. And so overall, I think that I've said it a lot on here. I just don't know that Jeff Driscoll is a quarterback that you can win a lot of ball games with. He did make some plays, and he impressed me more than he has so far in his career in this game with some of the throws he made. But then some of the simple plays, he just doesn't seem to have the it factor, the, I don't know if it's calmness, presence of mind, just the ability to make some of the routine plays or to step up and avoid the rush. He's got the physical tools. He just doesn't seem to have it in the head at times.
You say that. He threw 25 for 43 for 295 and 3 TDs. He had an interception, but
only one interception. Okay.
295 and 3 TDs.
But don't you feel like he left a lot of plays out on the field too?
To a degree, but Kentucky's defense is just fast. I mean, they were everywhere. I mean, every time you turned around, they were in somebody's face, except the one time it mattered. Well, the 15 times it mattered, they had a guy in somebody's face, and they didn't stop two people, Matt Jones and Robinson. So other than that, the defense played a really good game. They put pressure on Driscoll. He was never comfortable.
That's very true. And no quarterback looks good when they're under pressure all game.
Yeah. So go on.
Well, so I think that the two takeaways I had were, one, I think Florida is going to have some problems this year, and Muschamp is possibly in trouble. But I also think that Stoops is doing a great job, and Kentucky is a much better football team in year two under Stoops. I mean, they didn't win the game, and that's all that matters, of course, but they made plays that Kentucky teams, at least in recent history, just don't make. And a lot of it, I think, is probably the quarterback who you had told us in the preseason and had himself an arm. This is really the first time I had seen him play extended periods of time. And, you know, they were able to make plays down the field. They were able to do things that when you have athletes on offense, you can do that Kentucky hasn't done in a while. So I was impressed with Kentucky.
I saw, and I've touted his arm. He's got a strong arm. He's mobile. He's fast. He's tall. He's big. But he had a touch, too. I mean, he was able to put some lift under those balls and throw it exactly where his receivers could catch that ball. And more times than not, he was poised under pressure. I was real happy with the way Kentucky played that ball game.
Yeah, I think as a Kentucky fan, you have to be, I know we don't talk about moral victories, but from where the Kentucky program was, to go into the swamp, whatever the state of Florida may be right now, which we don't completely know, it's still going into the swamp and taking them to three more times and really having a couple of opportunities to put that game away that they just kind of failed to capitalize on. So if you're a Kentucky fan, you have to be pretty excited about that, especially the way the East looks right now. Not that you're going to win the East, but it looks like there's a couple of wins out there that maybe we didn't think were possible before the season began.
Defensively, Tennessee looked okay against Oklahoma. You know, I was listening to some of the folks today talking about how, you know, that pick six was a 14-point swing and it was almost a six-point ball game. That might be true, but if you watched some of that game, Tennessee never really seemed like they were in that ball game. Oklahoma seemed like they always had control of that ball game, no matter what the score ended up being or what it was at that time or that pick six that came around. So I don't know what – now, Tennessee's the same boat as Kentucky is in that they are better. I'm not going to say they're not better, but, you know, it wasn't a close ball game, at least with Kentucky – you know, as a Kentucky fan, we can sit here and say we took Florida to three overtimes for them to beat us by six. But Florida's not the fourth-ranked team in the country. But Tennessee, I don't think to me ever really – it never felt like – and I didn't get to watch all that game because the Kentucky game was a marathon. But I never really felt like Tennessee was in – had a chance to be in that ball game.
Yeah, it was an interesting game. It was, you know, around here you're hearing a lot of Tennessee fans talking about how happy they are with how well they played. And to an extent, they have a point. It's kind of the same thing that we've talked about, well, really that we talked about the first 2 weeks with Tennessee, and that these are the kind of games that the first 2 weeks, that is, are the kind of games that, yeah, they blew out bad teams, but they didn't used to blow out those bad teams. Well, this week, they showed some fight, and they didn't give up. What you were saying about Vanderbilt not giving up in the first quarter. You know, last year when they went to play Oregon, they basically gave up after the first quarter and got completely blown out. So there were some positive signs for this Tennessee team, and, yeah, that pick six was a backbreaker. I mean, we're talking about it potentially being a 10-point game. They also had another turnover within the 5-yard line that looks like they're going to go down and score some points. But at the same time, like you said, Oklahoma just always felt in control. It never really felt like Tennessee was threatening. And as is usually the case when there is one team that is has far superior talent, they tend to make plays even when their back's against the wall that turn what could be a close game into kind of a blowout. And, you know, what we talked about all along that we knew was going to be Tennessee's problem, they looked good at the skill positions. They were making plays. They match up well there. Their defense, for the most part, looked good. But, man, they were under siege at the offensive line. And poor Worley was just – I mean, I bet he's still on ice because he was getting hit, it seemed like, every single play.
Yeah, we were just talking about Driscoll always being under pressure. Worley lived under pressure. I mean, he was he was a David Boy song that whole game.
Yeah, he was. I mean, that was a gutsy performance by him because he had to be nervous every time he dropped back to pass. But if they don't do a better job of protecting him against some teams coming up, he's not going to make it through the season. I think that Oklahoma probably has one of the best pass rushes that Tennessee will see this season. Again, at one of those Big 12 teams that's built to stop these all the spread offenses in the Big 12. The difference is Oklahoma also has the size and athleticism to kind of stack up the run. But, you know, you saw a Tennessee team that had kind of struggled with the run against the Arkansas States and the Utah States of the world. And they didn't set the world on fire, but to go for, what, like 140, I think, somewhere in there.
Yeah, that's what I've got him at.
Yeah, Jalen Hurd did he go over 100? I don't know if he even pulled up. He was close.
14 for 97.
Yeah. you know, to put that those kind of numbers up against the defense that's probably going to be a top 20 unit. You know, there were some good things out of it, but they were just never really a threat. And they were playing the team that's much better than them, so I don't know how much you can expect out of them. But, you know, it was still a 24-point loss, so I don't know how proud you can be.
It's 140 yards, but it's 26 carries, 25 carries.
Well, yeah, they probably had a bunch of sack yardage taken off of that, too.
I didn't even count that. Worley had six attempts for negative 23 yards. I excluded him in that number. I just looked at the running backs. 25 carries for 140 yards. That's less than 3 yards a carry if my math's correct. That's not setting the world on fire no matter who you're playing.
26 for 140? That math's not right.
No, it's less than six a carry. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And that's respectable.
Yeah, that's good.
You know, if you're getting close to 6 yards a carry, that's respectable. So I take that back.
I heard had one or two pretty good long runs. They weren't getting 6 yards a clip. They were getting stuffed a lot, but then Hurd kind of broke a couple. And he looks like a legit. I mean, they're going to have a fun 3 years with him because Hurd, he looks like the real deal.
Hurd's long was 43 yards.
Okay.
So, yeah, Tennessee's not going to just destroy anybody, but they're going to help make some more games competitive. You look at some of the other games, I think we can quickly go through them. LSU kind of just toyed with UL Monroe, didn't really put it on until really never. I mean, just here and there.
Didn't put it on until never. Yeah, really? They've got offensive issues, man. They don't. I'm not sure they have a quarterback that can win some of these games where they're going to have to put up points, because there are some teams in the SEC that can score.
We'll find out next week, because they go to, or Mississippi State goes there, and they've got a really good defense. So we're going to see what Jennings is really like next week for LSU. Alabama.
And Mississippi State can score. So
yeah.
That'll
yeah. Be... Well, we can talk about Mississippi State too. I mean, they didn't score anything in the fourth quarter, but Prescott, I think it was like 12 and a half minutes to go. He decides to tuck the ball and run, gets hit. It didn't hurt him, but all of a sudden Mullins looks at him and yanks him. You know, he's like, I'm not getting you hurt.
Because enough of that.
Because he had already passed for a touchdown, caught a touchdown, and ran for a touchdown.
Triple threat.
So, you know, that's all you need to say about Mississippi State against South Alabama. Ole Miss, you know, Bo Wallace put up some really impressive numbers against Louisiana Lafayette.
Yeah, Ole Miss is looking good. I mean, you can't say they haven't played anybody. Boise State is not a nobody, and I guess Vanderbilt is a nobody. I don't know. It's still an SEC win.
Yeah, it's an SEC win, exactly. And you know, really, Bo only had a bad half so far.
Yeah.
That first half throwing three picks at Boise State or against Boise State. After that, he's looked really sharp. We kept talking about which Bo Wallace you're going to get. It looks like he's going to be more good than bad. So that's the threat for Ole Miss, is if he stays impressive, then they've really got a shot to really give the Alabama, LSU, Auburns a run for their money this year. It's shaping up to be a much stronger West than even before. And then, and you guys down in Alabama, I mean, that was an easy peasy, was it not?
Yeah, it was not as sharp as you would like it to be. It looks a lot better than it was. They still got secondary problems. They don't seem to have anyone, even with Eddie Jackson back, that can make a play on the ball when he's in, you know, single coverage. That just receivers are winning the one-on-one battles consistently, like 100% of the time. I don't know.
But you've got a receiver that's winning the battle 100% of the time, too.
Yeah. When was the last time an Alabama receiver led the nation in receiving? It's, you know, Kiffin did this at USC. Guys like Marquise Lee, got the ball a ton, and he seems to find ways, credit to him, he seems to find ways to get his best player on the outside of the ball. And there are a lot of teams that can't do that, that just can't figure out how to do that. And Kiffin does, and Cooper is absolutely going off right now. So that's good. I think it's going to be an Alabama team that has to score, outscore teams to win against some of the better quality opponents. It looks like Blake Sims is your starting quarterback now, as he played basically the entire way where it was still in doubt, in air quotes. It was never really in doubt, but Coker doesn't come in until the end of the third quarter, basically. So.
And Coker didn't look that impressive in mop-up duty either, did he?
No, he hasn't looked great. I mean, he's got – physically, you can see why people say he's a great prospect. He has an NFL arm, an NFL body in general. He's actually pretty mobile for a guy. But he just, you can just tell he just doesn't have – he's not comfortable with the playbook yet. And, again, I don't know – I think we just had way too high expectations for a guy who's been on campus for 3 months, has no rapport with the receivers, you know, is battling a guy that's been there 5 years. And, you know, Blake Sims has some physical limitations, but he also has some things that open things up with his legs that Alabama quarterbacks haven't had. And he knows what he's doing. He's not going to make really bad mistakes for the most part. So it looks like it's going to be Sims going forward, unless he does something so atrocious that Saban just has to go to Cooper.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. It's been settled, and if you asked us all at the beginning of the season, that's not who we thought would be leading the Tide this year as your quarterback. Now, the last team that we have is A&M against Rice, and we were actually right on this one. We didn't think that Rice was going to give them problems. When we did our preview, I don't think any of us said that Rice team was going to give A&M any fits. They kind of just were in coast mode the whole way, and the way some of these teams have performed against these lesser opponents for A&M. So it's going to be exciting to see what we get, because most of those cupcake-type games are over for the most part. So, you know, as you look into week four and – you know, we can close the book on week three and say we can't say anything bad about Auburn last week.
We definitely can't.
You know, but they get first billing this week, getting primetime Thursday night, going to the Little Apple over to Kansas State. You know, both of them 2-0. That's an intriguing ball game. Now, if you look at it on paper, there should be no reason why Auburn doesn't run away with this game. But I would be a little scared if I was an Auburn fan.
Yeah, I'm very excited about this. Not too often you get a Thursday night SEC game against an actual quality opponent, and you know, it's going to be awesome. Going to give me something to look forward to in the middle.
So
the
Egg Bowl is not a quality opponent.
Well, I do enjoy the Egg Bowl. That's Thanksgiving, you know. It's holiday football, but
I know.
Early season. Don't kill me, Blair. But, yeah, I think that I would be nervous if I'm an Auburn fan just because it's a quality opponent. You're going on the road. It's on a Thursday. It's not a short week. Auburn had the bye. Gus will have them ready to go. So you got to be a little bit nervous there. But seeing how Kansas State looked against Iowa State and seeing how incredible Auburn looks offensively, it's hard for me to imagine them not winning by two touchdowns or more.
Yeah, no, I'm the same way. I mean, as much as we don't give Auburn love, they're a good, I mean, they're a top five program in the country right now by the record, by the poll. So somebody thinks they're really, really good, and you know they are good. I still don't know what Auburn produces and what they have on the field, and the thing is, nobody knows, because Malzahn's keeping everything close to the vest. Why in the first two games lets you know what Auburn can produce and what they can do when you don't have to? Because that's just going to give all these other teams, the Alabamas and the other teams in the West, more stuff that they can help scheme against. So I can understand why he's not giving the full arsenal out there. You still don't know if Marshall's going to be the right guy to throw the ball all the time. You saw what he could do when he came in after a suspension. He was able to come in and start running the ball right away. become effective moving the ball, and you all of a sudden had that extra threat that he possessed. I don't know. Do you see him doing a two quarterback system now with the other quarterback coming in to throw some because he has such a strong arm? Because everybody still knocks Marshall for his accuracy.
Yeah, and apparently some caller called in the Malzahn's. You know, all the coaches now have a weekly show. Some caller called in and asked if there were any packages with both quarterbacks on the field at the same time, and Malzahn kind of gave a wink, wink, nod, nod, there may be. And if anybody can pull out some crazy gadget play, it's Malzahn. I don't know how much quarterback system there will be because, man, even though Marshall is inaccurate, he's got just enough of the pass threat to hit the big play, and you just cannot contain the run game when he's in there. So I don't know that he has to be. I mean, he wasn't last year, and they were unstoppable.
I agree. I don't think you have to change that plan much to be successful at Auburn. But Malzahn, and it could all be a smokescreen, you know, that he wants Marshall to pass more. That could all be just smoke and mirrors for us to be talking about that stuff, and when he's not going to change anything that he normally did. I don't know. I do think that that's going to be an intriguing game. I would say that Auburn should easily win by 10 points, but you never know what happened. Kansas State's a tough place to play. They've had their share of upsets over the years in Manhattan. That's right, Manhattan, Kansas, is it?
Yeah, that's right.
So I'm excited. I'm like you. I like the Thursday night matchup. And Blair and I have had that discussion in the past. I'm going to think that this is going to be more of an occurrence with the SEC Network and ESPN tie-in.
Yeah.
And here's the reason why, is that you're going to do teams exactly like you did Auburn here. You're giving them the bye the week before, giving them a Thursday night. Now they've got 10 days between the next game. It's a little inconvenient, but it gets the players back on the field sooner than a full two-week lag time, which the coaches, realistically, if you had an honest conversation with them, they probably like that, because once you get to that two-week time period, that's a long time away from the football field without hitting people for real. So you've shortened that up, and let's face it, they get really good numbers. What's going to hurt them long term is that the NFL deal with CBS, you know, because yeah. I forgot what the number was as far as ratings, but it blew any NFL game on Thursday night previously that was on the NFL Network out of the water. So that's what happens when you get those network games. But I know that the SEC would have a big draw on most Thursday nights if they did that, and it's all about the dollar. Whether anyone, and there's not anyone that cannot sit here and say that's not why they're doing football. It's why they did the package deal. That's why they have the network out there. It only makes sense that if they're going to get more revenue to start having more of these Thursday night games. If you look, it's what, a 14-week schedule with two bye weeks put in there?
Mm-hmm.
So out of the 14 weeks, right now we have three this year, I think, 3 weeks that have Thursday night games. I could easily
see the SEC Thursday night games.
Well, we kicked off the season with one.
Well, yeah, that's true. Okay.
You're going to have one over Thanksgiving, and you've got this one. I don't know if there's any others.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I didn't think about that.
So you already have three. It wouldn't be hard to add another one when you get some extra open dates involved there. Now, all of a sudden, you know, you get an SEC matchup or another big matchup like this with another good out-of-conference game, you're going to get eyeballs. So it makes sense. It makes monetary sense. There's no reason why you're not going to see more of these start to happen. That's my opinion.
It's also interesting that they're going on the road. I don't know how many of the power SEC programs would give up a Saturday home game because of the complaints they might get from fans. It may not be an issue at all, but it kind of makes sense that they're going on the road for this one and they still get their Saturday allotment of home games.
Blair gave me that. Let's look at the revenue. Are they going to lose that much revenue? They're going to make their fans a little upset, but guess what? If it's Tuscaloosa, it's still going to sell out.
Oh, yeah, it's still selling out.
If it's the Swamp, it's still going to sell out. And you can't tell me that they're not going to make more money off the TV revenue deal than they will with the butts in the seat.
No, that's true, but I don't know how much they piss off like the people in the city depend on game day weekends to make money, you know, and they want to maintain relationships there because you're not getting as many hotel nights, you're not getting the
Or are you? Let's think about this. If it's a Saturday game, there's a good chance it's a 12 o'clock or a 2 o'clock, or an afternoon game, a 5 o'clock game. Now all of a sudden you can drive in, tailgate, and go home. If it's a 7 o'clock night game on a Thursday night, guess what? They're going to get in Wednesday, Thursday morning, possibly to tailgate all day. So there's going to be revenues all day from restaurants and different places. They're all going to spend the night. They're not going to get up and go. Most of them aren't going to get up after the game and drive home. So you're going to get hotel revenue that night. So there's not going to be that. And then everybody's going to go out and party after they win, air quotes, you know. So there's still money to be made for the city that these places are involved with. I think it's just, from a monetary standpoint, the TV deal trumps all that. And so the revenue that the local bar is going to make doesn't really concern Mike Slive and the chancellors and the ADs and everybody else at the SEC. What they're going to see is the extra zeros, you know, that are coming at the end of this. It's not just, you know, $10,000-$15,000 weekend for a local bar, which is a huge weekend possibly. It's $150,000 or it's $1 million weekend type of impact. It's just monetarily, it's, you can look at the numbers and it's going to make sense. You're going to see, I think you're going to see more of those. But
I hope so. I support it.
I do too. I mean, you're asking for them to do one. You know, I'm not saying Alabama needs to have every game on a Thursday night. We're not saying that. It works for the NFL. You know,
If the NFL can make every team play on a Thursday, then so can the SEC.
That's exactly what I'm saying. So, you know, I see that to come down the road a little more. And I'm trying to look here to see if there's any other ones. I don't think there is. Yeah, I don't think there's any other Thursday night games this year. I think there's just the three. So that's just my little tangent. So now that we've talked about Auburn for a good 10 minutes and how they're paving the way for bringing more revenue in for the SEC.
There you go.
Now, there are a couple cupcake games. Troy is going to Georgia. Georgia gets to really take some aggression out on them. I feel sorry for Troy.
Yeah, get right game.
Yep. So that's going to get – I think that's going to get ugly. Texas A&M, they get SMU. And they go to SMU for that game. I don't see any issues with that.
No. June Jones had to retire because SMU has been so bad. So I don't know that SMU is going to put much of a scare into Texas A&M.
Yeah, and we didn't think they were going to give them much of a scare at the beginning of the season either.
No.
Indiana, we've already talked about them. They lost to Bowling Green and beat Indiana State. And they go to Columbia. So we still don't know what Missouri is going to bring to the table. Other than they're going to go start the season 4-0. Arkansas, Northern Illinois. You know, that's good news for Arkansas. They're going to start 3-1. That's a big confidence booster to come off Texas Tech and still get another win. And an interesting, I don't know, one of the serious XM guys today was talking. Would it make sense for Northern Illinois to join the Big 12? So, you know, they're a MAC team, and they're a MAC team that has beaten teams in the past. I don't think that's an Arkansas loss, but it should be another good game. But, you know, the one thing they didn't talk about, other than it's in Northern Illinois, just outside of Chicago. And so what they did say was most folks in Chicago aren't big Illinois fans, and they aren't Northwestern fans because of being a private college. that this is an easy way for Chicago area to get a large fan base involved with a program. You get to the Big 12, you get some more recognition. You're going to get TV dollars. But what you also do, which he didn't mention, in my opinion, is now all of a sudden you've opened up Illinois, you know, and the viewing market of Chicago.
Right.
You know, same reason we talk about, you know, who can be added to the SEC. Well, A&M gave them the state of Texas to add to the SEC network that was coming down the pipe. You know, it's those kind of things. Missouri added the whole state of Missouri. You know, that's the same type of money grab. So it could make sense that that would happen, but it's not going to be Northern Illinois isn't going to give them much of a battle. I think it's going to be a good game, but at the end, Arkansas's got that one.
Yeah, I agree. I don't really have anything to add. I'm sure they'll run it a bajillion times.
South Carolina is coming here to Nashville to play Vanderbilt. Another game where I think you're going to see South Carolina not want to let off the gas. They know Vanderbilt can sneak up and beat some programs. They've done that in the past. What are your thoughts on this game?
Yeah, I think that Vanderbilt is terrible and that they're so inferior athletically to a team like South Carolina, even though we don't think South Carolina is that great. If the line is below 27, I'm taking it. Above 27, I might be a little nervous. Going to be a complete blowout.
I do think this is a game that South Carolina is going to let Mike Davis really be able to get the ball and run it. You know, we talked about how he didn't even have the most carries, or he had the most carries and not the most yards this week against Georgia. I think both are going to be the case this week coming up against Vanderbilt. And so that leaves us with three games that we haven't talked about, or two. Just two.
The two big ones.
The two big ones, exactly. Saving, we made you all wait to listen to this.
Got to keep sticking around.
That's right. Mississippi State going to Death Valley. It's a night game. That's what scares me about it if you're Mississippi State. Their defense is really going to test LSU. It's going to test Jennings. We've already talked about that. It's going to test Fournette and Hillard and everybody in the backfield, because Mississippi State can stop the pass and the run if they choose to. I don't think they've had a single team so far, and they've not played anybody great, but they've not allowed a rusher over 100 yards yet. That being Mississippi State. Dak Prescott's had a really good season so far. I already told you last game he passed, caught, and ran for a touchdown. So this is set up to be a really exciting game. Who do you think is going to win? I know you're high on Mississippi State, but do you think they can come into Death Valley and beat the number 8 LSU Tigers?
It's so hard to pick Mississippi State because of what we talked about before the season, how they just haven't, they just don't beat LSU. But as I've watched LSU and I've watched Mississippi State, it's also hard for me to pick LSU because I just don't know if they have enough of a passing game to make up for the fact that Mississippi State is not going to be run all over like LSU would like to do. LSU will plays in the run game. They're not going to consistently get 7 yards, you know, 7 yards of dust. I mean, they're going to get stopped some, and they're going to have to make plays through the air. That's the one weakness Mississippi State has shown so far. UAB kind of lit them up through the air, but I just don't trust LSU to be able to do that. And Dak Prescott is going to make plays. It's still really hard for me to say Les Miles finds a way to win games like this when you're kind of doubting them. I'm still picking LSU, but I feel pretty good about Mississippi State being able to pull off an upset.
That's the way I am with this one, and I'd like to go against you and say, no, Mississippi State can win this one. If I was Blair, I'd be able to do that. But they can beat LSU. I don't know if they will beat LSU. Death Valley is such a tough place to play. They're playing at night. And and I forgot the number that Blair gave us at the beginning of the season when we looked at both these teams in this game. How many times LSU has beaten Mississippi State? It's one of those where they're going to have to – I can't pick them until they can at least prove they win one. So I'm like you. I've got to take LSU with this battle. And that leaves us the last battle, Florida Gators going to your Crimson Tide.
Yeah, I'm glad this is in Tuscaloosa. I think that this Alabama team has some holes. I'm not sure if Florida is the team to take advantage of some of those holes. They have shown they have a receiver that can make some plays down the field. And just like we were talking about with Mississippi State, that's definitely where Alabama is vulnerable. They can't seem to win one-on-one matchups in the secondary. They are doing a great job stopping the run. So it's going to come down to Driscoll makes plays. I think Alabama's offense is going to be able to make – I was more concerned about Florida's defense until I saw Kentucky play them. And Florida seemed to kind of make the big play, but not the consistent just shutdown play. So I think this probably winds up being around a 10-point game. But it's Alabama's definitely beatable, even by a Florida team that is not what Florida typically is.
Yeah, as good as Kentucky played Florida, I'm still not buying that Florida is that much improved. I want to think that they are because that just makes the Kentucky Wildcats look that much stronger. But Alabama's got a lot to prove because whether Saban wants to tell everybody this or not, all the media and all the sports people like ourselves sit here and talk about Alabama and how they're still unproven. You know, what do they have at quarterback? What do they have at receiver? What do they have at defense? This is now an opportunity for them to be able to show them, because West Virginia is in some ways similar to Florida. Both programs are supposed to be much better than they were last year, and West Virginia proved that and gave Alabama a pretty good game. So Alabama is not going to go in there and take Florida lightly. They're not going to say that Florida's a 4-8 team. They're going to come in there and expect to really show them that Florida is a good program and that they can beat a really good program, especially in the SEC. So I expect at least I like your 10 points, but I would go as far as I'm going to give Alabama 2 touchdowns.
I hope you're right. I think the other thing is that the way that they've run the offense with Blake Sims in so far they've not really asked him to throw it downfield a lot. They've been able to hit the smoke screens, the slants, and the 5-yard hooks, and quick throws, and not asking him to push the ball downfield. And the few times they have asked him to push it downfield, it's been mixed results. So this is the first team that actually has the athletes to play press man coverage and not just give up those quick and easy, pitch and catch type plays. So we're going to see if Blake Sims is able to. It doesn't have to be a ton. It just needs to be a couple to soften the defense up enough to allow some of that underneath stuff. So we'll see. I'm just a nervous Alabama fan who is overreacting to some of their flaws because every team in the country has flaws. I hope it's a 10 or 14 point game, but I'm nervous. I'm glad it's in Tuscaloosa, put it that way.
Yeah, and the last thing I'll say on this, and we'll wrap things up, is that when you look at the national media, you know, they kind of have slighted Alabama. Haven't they fallen in the polls even though they haven't lost? And that's because of some of the opponents they've played versus like Oregon. So they've got something to prove that, yeah, if we're going to play for the national championship, and we deserve to be the number one team in the nation, and this is how we do it. We take advantage of the teams that are supposed to be better in the East or supposed to be good in the East, and we really dominate them. And that can get – because there's going to be eyeballs on this game, whereas there wasn't a lot of eyeballs on your game last week. No, you know, it's like, oh, Alabama's got this team. They'll easily win that. And they did, and they're supposed to. But it's Florida. Florida has the reputation. They're going to bring viewers in just for that. They're going to bring in people just to see that. So I think there's a lot to prove from Alabama State this time around against Florida. So, guys, we appreciate you listening in. right at an hour. We did pretty good, Britton.
All right.
All right, all right, all right. we do this every week. SEC SRTs, the letters. I always keep saying numbers. I don't know why. The letters you need to know. Just go YouTube, Google, Facebook, Twitter, anywhere on social media. Do those six letters and go find us. Subscribe. If you happen to be on iTunes and you're still listening this far into the podcast, you know, go out there and subscribe to it on iTunes so that it shows up every time we do a new podcast, because we try to record every Monday, but that doesn't always happen. Sometimes it's on a Sunday, sometimes it's on a Tuesday. So if you go in and subscribe to it, or if you go to Stitcher and subscribe, you get this podcast automatically. You don't have to worry about going and finding it. It's going to show up when we record it and we get it posted for you. So guys, we appreciate you listening in. And with that, we are going to call this podcast done.